my breath coming faster as I scale the more than 400 fan-shaped steps. But I won't let a few stairs stop me from seeing the gargoyles at the top of the towers. I happen to like gargoyles. They're badass sentries, fiercely standing guard over the holiest of holy places. As light shines at the top of the stairs, my breath comes hard and fast, my thighs burning from the climb. When I reach the gallery on the North Tower, I'm outside at the top of the most famous church in the world. And it's spectacular. The city unfurls hundreds of feet below me, the river winding through Paris, the Eiffel Tower standing tall at the edge, the Louvre staking its famous claim by the water, the hills of Montmartre rising high. It's breathtaking. I stare off in the distance, delighting in the view, when something catches my attention out of the corner of my eye. I snap my gaze in its direction. I'm looking at an elephant. Holy smokes, there's an elephant perched next to a gargoyle. It's a stone elephant sitting on his big butt. He's not grotesque. He's simply an unexpected elephant. And that's exactly what I wanted to see, something that surprised me, something that makes me rethink my day, my opinion. I grab my phone and snap a shot of the elephant. This photo isn't a reminder for my to-do list. This shot has meaning. It signifies the opposite of regret. I can't regret the canceled vacation. If I'd have come here with Richard, he wouldn't have ventured up these steps, and I'd have felt bad going without him. That's on me. I would have wanted to climb them, but I'd have chosen to stay on the ground with him. Now, I feel sated because of this elephant. It feels like my reward, maybe even a reminder to shuck off the guilt that sometimes weighs on me. Let it go and focus on the future. Honestly, my only regret so far in my first 24 hours in Paris is that I didn't snag Archibald's phone number. That man was more delicious than the croissant, and it would have been fun to have a glass of wine or a cup of coffee with him. I give myself a virtual smack. I don't have time to let my mind wander to romantic interludes and flirty men. Extricating myself from a toxic relationship had felt like a Herculean feat at times, but I succeeded. Now, I'm on the other side of manipulation, of lies, of the huge albatross of guilt that anchored me to Austin for far longer than it should have. When I reach the ground, my phone buzzes. There's a text from my sister. Allison. I miss you so much it hurts, but you look like you're having a blast. Keep the pictures coming and keep on enjoying life. I tell her I miss her with the depth of a black hole, but that I'm loving it here, too. I resolve to keep snapping photos, but to make sure they matter, that I'm both capturing life and living it well. I post the elephant as the fitting first image on my Instagram feed. Hashtag first day in Paris, hashtag unexpected sights, hashtag great views, hashtag look around. When I close the app, I spot a message from the man with the rental company. Stefan, bonjour. The flat we arranged for you is all ready for tomorrow's meeting. The studio is perfect. I furrow my brow. I didn't plunk down a security deposit on a studio. I opted for a one-bedroom on the third freaking floor. Joy, I look forward to it. You mean the one-bedroom on the third floor? His reply is instant. Stefan.
Yes, the studio on the second. It is beautiful.
I sigh. Call me crazy, but I think Stefan might be trying to yank me around. I want to call Marisol and ask her advice, but I don't want to be a burden. I sort of wish the sweet little old lady from the plane had given me her business card, since she seemed the fairy godmother type, and I bet she'd know how to magic wand her way out of this mess for me. But alas, I'll need to handle this little situation on my own. Back at the hotel room, I find an email from Marisol. The agency already has a new translator for me. His name is Griffin, and he studied biology in school, so he knows the complicated technical lingo for the job. That's key. Though it's not necessary for him to understand how chemical reactions work, a scientific background and competence with terms that might flummox other linguists is an absolute necessity. Also, he's quite good at idioms, both in French and English, Marisol writes. If I approve, the agency can let him know. I tap my finger to my lip, a plan brewing. I wonder if he's good at dealing with rental agents trying to screw an American over. I hope this new translator is like Archibald, ready to save a lady about to commit a faux pas. I call Marisol and tell her Griffin sounds great. Will you ask if he can meet me tomorrow morning? Yes, he's ready to start right away. I give her the address of the rental. 9:30. I can't wait to meet him.
Chapter 6. Griffin. When someone you love dies, you hear more platitudes than you'll ever want to hear in your entire life. When one door closes, another opens. It was his time. Someday this pain will make sense. As for the last one, what the hell? How does that even make sense in a store selling pillows with stitched-on platitudes? In a shop peddling magnets with sayings? Who buys that? Let alone believes it. But someone must, because it's been served up to me. I've heard my fair share of clichés in the last year since my younger brother, Ethan, died in a mostly unexpected way. And I grin and bear it. Every time. Because ultimately, people mean well when they utter hackneyed sayings in the wake of a loss. What they mean is, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Me too. Still, I'm not a fan of banalities. I could do without hearing one, say, ever again. But back at my flat later that afternoon, a particular one pops into my head when Jean-Paul calls, though it has nothing to do with life and death. He tells me that because Annalise has been put on bed rest, he has an assignment to fill. An American chemist needs a translator who can handle on-site work and someone familiar with scientific lingo. The job as this woman's personal translator will last for at least 3 months as she transitions from the US to France. The company wants a translator for 4 hours a day, leaving the rest of the time free for me to work on written translations for other clients, spanning a variety of industries. Most gigs are short-term, lasting only a few days, resulting in occasional days off without pay, but this assignment is plum. 3 month jobs don't come around often, and the regularity coupled with the chance to keep up with afternoon work means I can sock away the rest of the money I need for my trip. When one door closes, another opens. Plus, the pay is higher than average since it requires special knowledge. I'm not a scientist, not even close, but I have a ridiculously handy degree in my pocket that helps immensely when it comes to scientific terminology. Marine biology. When I finished school, I didn't have a sodding clue what I wanted to study at university, so I picked something that might transport me to interesting places, to all the spots around the globe that I'd earmarked to visit someday. The sapphire waters along the coast of Greece, the islands that make up Indonesia, Belize, a scuba diver's paradise. Growing up outside London, we didn't partake in scuba too often, but that sounded precisely like what a marine biologist ought to be doing all day long, exploring warm waters. My choice of study might also have come from the weather. That winter was an unusually cold one in England when I selected my major subject, and marine biology sounded tropical. So, yeah, my reasons were clearly thorough. I never wound up exploring coral reefs off the coast of Australia, or swimming with the sea turtles in the Cayman Islands. But after university, I landed a gig at an aquarium, translating its descriptions of exhibits. The degree has helped me nab many sweet translation gigs since I've kept up my fluency in scientific names and terminology. This new job sounds promising. The client knows only enough French to be dangerous, Jean-Paul says. I know the kind. Indeed. The kind who orders in French then thinks she can sustain an entire conversation about politics because she managed to correctly ask for salmon. I laugh. Well, you know the saying. It's a big upstream jump from salmon to politics. Her name is Joy, and my first order of business will be to help her sort out some confusion with the apartment rental company. That should be a breeze, and a chance to impress her, so she'll happily keep me around for the entirety of the contract. The next morning, I head out early, and since I'm not due to meet the client for another 20 minutes, I grab a table at a cafe near the place she's going to be renting. As I drink my tea, I work through a French crossword puzzle that requires some seriously intense linguistic gymnastics. But I like this kind of mental stretching. It keeps my mind limber and ready for whatever challenges a job might throw my way. As I fill in each clue, I make note of the words in other languages I know, Spanish, Italian, some Portuguese, so I don't forget the ones I'm not actively working in. When I finish, I close the app and drain the rest of the tea. As I do, two thoughts occur to me. The first is that the tea has rapidly improved in this country and can finally hold a candle to what I grew up drinking. The second is that another door is reopening right now. A sexy as hell door. I rub my eyes. It's a mirage. But it's not a mirage. It's real. And it's brilliant luck. Judy is strolling down the street, heading in my direction. She wears huge green sunglasses with lenses the size of pizza pies. Her hair is twisted high on her head with several loose strands escaping to curl over her shoulders. Dark jeans are lucky again to embrace those long legs of hers. And a ruby red V-neck blouse completes the I want her number right fucking now look. I set down my cup, raise a hand over my eyes to shield them from the sun and call out, "Good morning, Judy! Are you following me now?" She startles, stops in her tracks and looks around. "Over here! I'm 5 feet in front of you!" She spins and her eyes land on me. She blinks, then a smile crosses her lips. "Perhaps you're following me. You did look like a stalker, Archie." I stand and offer her the chair next to mine. I'm not letting her go this time. I have 15 minutes before I meet the scientist lady, and I'm going to get Judy's number and land a date with her. Nothing less. "Would you like to join me?" She peers into the white ceramic cup in front of me. "Of course you drink tea." "As if there's anything else to drink in the morning. I only drink coffee." "Funny. They have that here too," I say, nodding at the red awning over Café Roussillon. She checks her watch, and the furrow in her brow tells me she's adding up the minutes. Time to press onward. "This place is fast, and it's good coffee, I'm told," I say, determined to convince her. I shoot her a grin, finishing with the real reason I want her to pull up a chair. "Besides, if you join me for coffee, there's a good chance I can convince you to tell me your real name and give me your phone number." She laughs. "You're a determined one." "When I want something, I can be." Her smile widens. "Since I'm early for my appointment, let's see how convincing you and the coffee can be." She takes the seat, and I sit too, rubbing my palms. "All right. Let's do this. Any particular type of coffee suit your fancy? Café crème, café au lait, café noisette?" She lowers her shades, peering at me over the top of those frames. "By coffee, I thought you meant a big fat frappuccino caramel mocha, since that's quintessentially American, right?" "Of course. And order it just like that." She laughs and takes her sunglasses off all the way. Her green eyes are intense, some of the darkest irises I've ever seen. "Your eyes are stunning." "Hard to look away from," I tell her. "Your baby blues aren't so bad either, Archie." "Thank you. And while I'm being blatantly honest, let me just say I had been hoping our conversation yesterday would have lasted longer." A small part of me still finds it odd to opt for such directness with a woman, but then, life is short. No point playing games anymore. I quite enjoy chatting with you. She inches closer. And while you're being blatantly honest, I'll do the same. I enjoy chatting with you as well, so I'd say it's a good thing we've bumped into each other today. The waiter weaves through the tables, and I catch his attention, quickly ordering another tea. I turn to my companion. How'd you take your coffee? Black, please, with a little cream, she asks hopefully. I sigh heavily. Oh, that's a tough one to order, I joke. Then I tell the waiter what she wants. When he leaves, Judy is staring at me. What is it? She shakes her head. It's just funny. You're like my personal food translator. I laugh. That's my job. I fix on a stern expression. And I take it quite seriously. I'll keep you with me then. Even though I could have ordered a cafe au lait, I'm not that terrible at French, am I? I really don't know how terrible you are, I say, teasing. We can find out if we do this again. I'd love to take you out. Would you like to have dinner with me? Her lips part, and I'm practically waiting to catch her yes in my hands. But it doesn't come. Just a rush of air over her lips, then she presses them together and stares down the street. She flicks her gaze back to me. You don't even know how long I'm in town. You don't know how long I'm in town either, I counter. True. So is that a no? Also, to answer you, I live here, for the moment. Her lips quirk up. I live here too, for the moment as well. Then we should go out again. After all, how can we be assured we'll bump into each other again? You have to admit this was pretty damn good luck this morning. She smiles. Does seem strangely promising. The waiter returns with our beverages, and Judy raises her little cup to clink with mine. To chance encounters. I'll drink tea to that. After a swallow, I put down the cup and look her in the eyes again. You haven't said yes. Do you have something against devilishly clever men who are exceptionally good at ordering both hot beverages and delicious pastries? She laughs loudly this time, and the older couple at the table next to us scowl in unison. Judy brings her hand to her mouth, feigning embarrassment. She collects herself and her expression shifts. There's a twinkle in her green eyes. I'm not opposed, but I still don't know how well you could navigate a chocolate shop, for instance. A burst of possibility flares in me. She's closing in on a yes. All those confusing chocolate flavors, you'd want to make sure you chose the right one. Absolutely. After all, who wants to take home a milk chocolate truffle when there are dark chocolate ones to be consumed? No one does, simply no one. Judy, I say as she takes a sip of her coffee. She points to the cup. This is quite good. So it's a yes to a date where I take you to a chocolate shop and personally ensure you don't suffer with milk chocolate? She nibbles on the corner of her lip and takes a deep breath. Look, that sounds fantastic, but the truth is I just got out of a very bad relationship and I'm not looking for anything. Her bluntness makes me want to thread a hand in her hair and kiss her lipstick off. Then again, everything I know about her makes me want to do that. How fortuitous. I'm not looking for anything either. I lower my voice. My words just for her as I lean a little closer. A feat made easier by the lovely proximity of these tiny chairs. Except to get to know you more. She sighs. I really need to focus on work and my new job. I honestly don't think I can make time for anything else. I need to focus on work too, which makes me think we're on exactly the same page. Keep it casual. Keep it light. She inhales deeply. Stop making this so difficult. I smirk. Does that mean you're having a hard time saying no? You're a terrible flirt. And terribly convincing with my flirting, yeah? She swallows, and a strand of hair blows gently in the breeze. I brush that strand off her shoulder. When my fingertips touch the fabric of her shirt, her breath hitches. She raises her face and her eyes lock with mine. You're saying we could be not looking for anything together, Archie, just exploring? I raise an eyebrow at her wordplay. Yes. Let's explore. Together. She licks her lips and nods. Give me your phone, and I'll give you my number. I'm ready to punch the air. In an instant, I whip out my mobile and hand it to her. She clicks open a text message, taps in her number, and then hands the device to me. Send me a text, Archie, with your real name. As she sips her coffee, I type and hit send. Her phone buzzes from inside her handbag. Grabbing it quickly, she slides her finger over the new message, a mischievous glint in her eyes. As she reads, her smile erases itself. Nice to meet you, Griffin. Her voice is heavy. I'm Joy.
Chapter 7. Joy. Well, that's a bit of a downer, to say the least. Honestly, I was getting a bit excited, and by excited I do mean down there, at the possibility of both shopping for sweets and aimlessly exploring with this handsome man. Both of those might be euphemisms. But the point is this, a little diversion with no strings, no ties, might have been fun. Something to keep me busy on the occasional evening while I focused on work during the day. But now... You're really Griffin? I ask, each word coming out stilted.
You're really Joy?
His voice is leaden. I point to my chest. Your client? He taps his breastbone.
Your translator?
I flash him a wan smile. It's reflected back at me. Griffin blurts out,
You don't look like a chemist.
My brow knits. What does a chemist look like? He scrubs a hand across his jaw, and the look in his blue eyes, concern, worry, tells me he realizes he just goofed.
I just meant...
Oh, please, do tell me what you meant. I rest my chin on my joined hands and bat my eyes. I'm baiting him, but I want to make sure he's not a sexist pig. The last thing I want is for the guy who's about to become my mouthpiece to have some sort of issue with my job or role. He stammers.
I just didn't think.
He waves a hand at me, more precisely at my chest. You didn't think scientists had breasts? I ask innocently. He shakes his head in a flurry and lifts both hands in surrender.
No, 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 no.
He fires off each denial like a round of ammunition. He stabs a finger against the tiny table and it wobbles.
Also, I knew you were a woman since they gave me your name, so yes, I'm well aware that scientists can have breasts.
Okay, so he's not a chauvinist. I breathe a sigh of relief, and I think I know why he made the you don't look like a chemist comment now. And I kind of can't resist toying with him. It's been so long since I had someone to spar with, someone who wanted this kind of rat-a-tat-tat game of verbal badminton. You just didn't think they'd be breasts you'd want to touch, I say pointedly, because there's no need to pretend we aren't attracted to each other. He blinks. His expression is curious, as if he's trying to process the oddity of my remark.
You're quite blunt. And it's ridiculously attractive, so maybe you ought to stop that now.
I laugh and decide to go easy on him, but only a little. Stop being blunt? That'll be mighty hard, but I'll do my best. Maybe you can stop being ridiculously attractive then, too. Sound fair? He laughs.
Absolutely. He takes a deep breath, then meets my eyes.
Does that mean I'm forgiven for thinking your breasts are fantastic, or forgiven for thinking you weren't a chemist?
Only if you admit you thought I'd have beakers with me, a white lab coat, and Coke bottle glasses.
I don't think I completely thought you'd look like a nerd, per se.
He sounds like he's trying to avoid saying something. I drum my fingers on the table and take a sip of my coffee. What did you think I'd look like? He drags a hand through his hair.
I didn't think you were a chemist, because you're fucking gorgeous, and I don't know any gorgeous chemists, so I suppose, yeah, maybe I did think you'd have a lab coat on, rather than a stun me with your stupendous figure and incredible eyes and pouty mouth costume on.
And for that, right there, I can't be mad at him, not even a little. You're too much. And I wish you were still Archie, I say, shaking my head, letting the reality sink in that the man I momentarily contemplated having a fling with is now most decidedly off-limits. I don't believe it's a written rule anywhere, but if there were, I'm pretty sure banging my translator would be in the chapter on very bad judgment calls. He points a finger at me.
And if you think I'm stereotyping chemists, then you're guilty too, since you seem to think Brits all have stuffy names, he says, as if he's caught me on something as well.
He straightens his shoulders, adopting an admonishing look. Because of Archie?
And Alistair and Rupert.
He crosses his arms. He's too damn adorable. Fine, so we're both stereotyping. But what's the stereotype of a translator, then? He scratches his head.
Good question. He screws up the corner of his lips. I suppose just tall, dark, handsome, and completely charming.
I shrug. Funny, I was going to say good with tongues. He laughs, then leans across the table and whispers in that ridiculously sexy accent,
I'm very good with my tongue.
Shivering, I let the innuendo waft over me. Then I try not to linger too long on mouths or lips or tongues, especially since we shouldn't be going there. I guess I'll never know now. He frowns. I let my shoulders sag, but then I adopt a smile. Since we're both stereotyping, I'm afraid I'm guilty too. He lifts his cup and takes a drink.
How so?
Breezily, I answer, naturally, with your tall, dark, and handsome costume on, I thought you were a hot male model, and clearly I was wrong. As the waiter zips by, Griffin catches his attention and makes a scribbling gesture.
L'addition, s'il vous plaît.
He returns his attention to me.
Question. Why do we need to say male model, as if I could be anything but a male model? Why not just model?
Models are usually women.
And chemists usually aren't beautiful women I want to shag, but now suddenly can't.
Shag. Dear Lord, the way he says it, the fact that he says it, the sheer sexiness of that word in his delicious accent triggers a wave of goosebumps over my skin. Here it is, the great admission that we weren't just heading toward a date. We were going to explore aimlessly together, with that exploration being conducted in a clothes-free mode.
Le sigh. Le big, heavy, kick-my-toe-against-the-ground sigh.
Fine. You're not a model, I'm not Judy, and we're not going to explore together since we can't shag. He heaves a sigh, too.
Yeah, I suppose that's how it has to be.
That's for the best, surely. I didn't come to France looking for a no-strings-attached fling. In fact, I'm probably better off focusing squarely on my new job, my new home, and my new life. But for a few seconds there, I was enjoying the possibility of a little tryst, of getting lost in something that felt like the opposite of guilt, the opposite of too much attachment, something that felt only good. Perhaps I was looking for an antidote to my ex and I didn't even realize it. A pill of bliss, a drink of pure desire. It's been so long since I experienced that pull with someone.
After more than a year together, the spark between Richard and me had faded, and before he'd been injured, I'd been ready to rip the Band-Aid off. We were drifting, two magnets stripped of their charge. Then he had his accident. I cringe inside, my stomach twisting at the memories, the harsh, cruel memories of how everything changed, how I stayed longer than I intended. Now everything has changed for me once again. Time to zero in on why I'm here in France. I have a brand new chance in my career. I've been given a great gift with this job and the fresh opportunity to succeed in my field. I can't afford a distraction like a tall, sexy British man who'd kiss me senseless, knock the breath from my lungs, and then take me hard by the terrace window, all of Paris at my feet as he pleasured me. Whoa, talk about getting ahead of myself. I wipe the XXX version of this man from my mind. My brain is pure as the driven snow again. Let's just start fresh. I hold out a hand. I'm Joy Danvers Lively. It's a mouthful, and it's taken me years, but I've finally found it in me to forgive my parents for saddling me with their last names hyphenated. So cruel, don't you think? They each kept their last names, but made that double clunker my problem.
It is a lovely name. All three words, Griffin says with a smile as the waiter brings a little slip of paper.
I point to the bill. I can get it. Expense account and all. Griffin shakes his head, snatches the receipt, and says,
It'll be our first and only date, it seems. So at the very least, I ought to be a gentleman.
First and only. My heart drops a little at the stark truth, even though I know it has to be this way. He grabs a few euros from his wallet, leaves them on the table, and rises. As he stands, he extends his hand.
Griffin Thomas.
We shake. I'll admit, I want to yank him close and kiss the hell out of that handsome face, but I'm going to be good. This man is about to become my voice, and I can't take a chance. The job is too important. The chance to carve out a new life too valuable. I don't want to risk it by doing something foolish like boinking the person I'm supposed to spend so much time with.
And it's not even a quintessentially British name, he says as we weave away from the tables and to the sidewalk.
Yes, Griffin Thomas does in fact sound more like a male model's moniker.
He tuts. Don't be silly, Joy. If I were a male model, my name would be something ripped straight from a list of macho and sexy names.
He takes a beat as we reach the corner of the cobbled street.
I'd be Blaze.
I crack up. When I catch my breath, I say, You've clearly given this some thought.
You haven't?
He adopts the most serious look.
Don't you think that would be a fantastic name for a model? Blaze Dalton. Admit it, if that were my name, I'd have no choice but to be a model.
Demonstrating, he gives a smoldering look as we turn onto the side street, passing a sundial on the side of a building.
A male model.
Blaze Dalton, male model PI, I say, like a TV announcer. They'd make a TV show about you. You'd solve crimes, and you'd probably even be a nurse, too. Blaze Dalton, male model, PI, moonlighting nurse.
For when you need a crime solved and a bandage to go along with it.
Where are you from, Archie Blaze Dalton Thomas, the translator male model with a first aid kit? He chuckles as we stroll past old buildings with names on the buzzers like Mercier, Bernard, and Dubois, heading toward my furnished flat.
I grew up outside London. French mother, English father, bilingual in French and English since I was little. My parents still live outside London.
Are you close with them?
He nods. I text them often and ring them once or twice a week.
You are a good son.
I try. And what about you? Where are you from?
Born and raised in Austin, went to school in San Francisco, worked long and hard not to have a Texas accent.
Why?
I nudge him with my elbow. I didn't want people to stereotype me, to say I had a Texas drawl or what have you.
You don't really have a Texas drawl,
he says in a perfect imitation of a standard American accent. It's hilarious to hear him slide from his sophisticated voice to one I'm so accustomed to. and yet I've had enough of men from there. Never speak like that again, I tell him. He laughs. I'll stick to Archie talk. You do that. We navigate a stretch of sidewalk that's perhaps 2 feet across, and it delights me. The streets here are so different from the wide concrete ribbons back home, and I find their oldness, their foreignness, so damn charming. The street curves and narrows as we close in on the end nearest the river. I point to the addresses above the doors. Almost there. Now that the housekeeping is out of the way, are you ready for your first big assignment? Because it's time to kick ass and take names. I have a hunch this company is trying to pull a fast one on me, and I've no idea why. He nods intensely.
Yes, my boss mentioned your concern. And now you have Blaze Dalton, male model turned translator turned kick-ass fixer of problems with furnished flat leasing agencies, at your service.
I quirk up my lips, giving him a challenging stare. But can you say that in French?
Mais oui.
He rattles all that off, and I don't know if he said peas and carrots or that ridiculous title, but either way it sounded hot. Except, hot is precisely how I can't think of Griffin anymore. I take a look at the handsome man who'll be spending many of my days with me. Shame that he won't be my French booty call, since I quite enjoy chatting with him. Since the moment I met him in the bakery, we'd begun an effortless repartee. That kind of banter is hard to give up. But I don't have to let go of that side of him, since he'll be in my life in this professional role. Maybe he can become something else, too. Something I need even more than a lover. I have an idea, Griffin.
I happen to be quite fond of ideas, he says.
This feels even riskier than flirting. This is exposing my true heart. Would you be interested in being friends with me? When his smile spreads, nice and slow, it warms me from the inside out.
I would very much like that, Joy.
Chapter 8. Griffin. Friend is such a loaded word. It can mean all sorts of things, cover all manner of relationships. It's a blanket term that can suggest something deep and abiding, or something casual and relatively meaningless. It can apply to the most important relationships. My brother was my best friend, no question. Since I've lived in Paris, I've made plenty of new friends. Christian is a good mate, always up for a drink, a laugh, a night out. We share a common background, both of us have English dads and mums from other countries. Mine's French, his Danish. I have plenty of other friends here too, some French, some English, some from many other places. I didn't want to shag first. I'm not saying men and women can't be friends. It's just harder to be friendly when you start wanting one thing and then you need to press the brakes. Actually, slam on the brakes is more like it with this woman. But I can no longer think of Joy as the stunningly hot American with the quick tongue and fantastic tits. Instead, I have to reroute all brain circuitry to consider her not only a client, but also the direct route to getting the very thing I want most. Money. For a ticket out of town. I suppose a friend is precisely what she should be. What she should only be. It's a good thing she wants that. It's a great thing we're setting clear boundaries now. They'll help us as we work together over the next few months. Friends, I say, rocking back and forth on my toes. Like a good mate. She blinks, then smiles. Sure. I'll be your mate. Even though it'll be hard to think of her that way, I'll soldier on. Before we go in, tell me more about why you think they're trying to screw you over. She fills me in, telling me she placed a deposit for a one-bedroom flat on the third floor, on a road near the river, but the rental agent now insists her place is a studio on the second floor. Her eyes narrow as she tosses out possibilities. Did he rent mine to someone else? Is he trying to swindle me? Does the third floor flat have a better view, and now he's thinking because I'm a foreigner that he can pull the bait and switch and give me the crappier one? She raises her index finger. Most of all, what would Blaze Dalton do? I say, stroking my chin, sliding into my role as the model turned PI. Do you think it's possible something was lost in translation? She rolls her eyes, then pokes my chest. What's lost in translation is my money for my flat. I don't want him to take me because I don't know the language. Got it. Basically, you want me to go in guns blazing, full-on male model investigation style. Her eyes crinkle as she laughs. Yes, but wait, I can't just be the helpless gal. I arch a brow. I thought you wanted me to do the talking. Of course, but I don't want to roll over like a doormat. She shudders like that thought is abhorrent. She stops outside a small yellow boutique peddling little pencil cases and makeup bags with French sayings that draw Joy's attention. Tapping her finger across one, she translates the words out loud. Life is a dream. Well done. You hardly need me. Ha ha. She swivels and faces me, her eyes fierce. Here's the plan. I go in first, and you wait, say, across the street. I narrow my eyes. Explain the part where that's helpful. She waves her hands animatedly as we resume our hunt for 28, the number of her building. Because I'll get the lay of the land, assess the situation, determine if he's still trying to pull a fast one. If I get the apartment I want, great. Then I'll pat myself on the back for not being a damsel in distress. If I don't, then I give you a signal, and you strut in and do that thing you do. And what's that thing I do? I ask curiously. You know, that vous veux pepe le pew, le je ne sais quoi, voilà ou la la, she says, sliding into a nonsensical imitation of the French language. And boom, done, problem solved. I stop her, setting a hand on her arm. Since we're friends, I feel I must tell you this, but that plan makes absolutely no sense. She squares her shoulders. It makes perfect sense. How so? Because it's fun. Her big green eyes sparkle. Do you have something against fun? When her eyes glitter like that, it's almost as if fun is something she hasn't quite experienced in a while. I weave my index and middle fingers together. Fun and I are like that. But you're aware that the whole secret code thing won't necessarily help you score the flat you want, yeah? She sighs, on the path to relenting. Then she stops in her tracks like a dog digging in. What? Are we here? You said 28, it's the next one, I say. She clasps her hand to her mouth and points a few feet ahead. I follow her gesture to a tall pink door. It's wood, carved ornately at the handle, and is the brightest shade of neon pink I've ever seen in this city. Yes, Joy, it's a hot pink door. Paris can be a colourful city. Her eyes drift up to the blue square number atop the stone doorway. 28. A sound slips from her mouth like a high-pitched whistle. Okay, so that's your building. Are you offended by pink? Did you have a bad experience with a Barbie dream house? Or does it remind you of Pepto Bismol, perhaps? She shakes her head, drops her hand and grabs my arm, tugging me into the doorway right before the apartment. Her voice turns to a whisper. It's like seeing a pair of Christian Louboutins. Okay. So that's good then? You like Louboutin, I presume? I don't just like them. I'm in love with them. I can't control myself around Louboutins. I don't care about whether he's tricking me. I want nothing more right now than to live in that building with the hot pink door. This woman is a hoot. She's a wild, over-the-top whirlwind. You can't be serious. In an instant, her expression turns deadly serious. It's pink, Griffin. Pink. Yes, I know. She points at it. It's literally the cutest, coolest, most unnecessary door in the entire city, and therefore I must live there. How does one thought follow the other? Have you ever bought a purse because it's irresistible? A necklace you didn't need? Perfume because it's decadent? Oddly enough, no, I deadpan. Well, I have. And the door is the same. I want to live there because it's everything that makes Paris different and special. Because I would never find this door back home. Because it has no purpose except to beguile me with its absolute, utter cuteness. And that means you're going to have to handle this whole mess for me, because if I go in there, I'll say yes to anything. I drop a hand to her shoulder, my tone deadly serious. I understand your predicament. The door is like a good game of rugby. You're powerless when it comes on the telly. She arches a brow. Rugby? Huh. More like football, the real kind. But if that helps you understand it, let's go. As Joy emerges from the doorway and closes the distance to number 28, a thin, goateed man with glasses strides up the street, chattering away on his mobile. His voice is soft, but I pick up a few words, something about not that place and you know why, and then sorting it all out. I furrow my brow, not liking the sound of those words. When he ends the call, he spots my companion. Hello, you are Joy. He takes her hand and shakes. I'm Stefan. Good to meet you. Yes, nice to meet you. This is my friend Griffin. I take his hand and shake, speaking in English since that's how the conversation began. Good to meet you. He looks at Joy. You want to see the flat now and take the key? Yes. The flat on the third floor, I say quickly, switching to French. Oh, you speak French, he says, segueing instantly as he unlocks the pink door that has, evidently, rendered Joy incapable of anything but ogling. It's a door, for fuck's sake. Sometimes I think I will never understand women. I'm familiar with the language, I say dryly as we stride into the foyer. He laughs. Familiar? Good one. Then I need to tell you something. I feel absolutely terrible, but we can't rent her the place she wants. She gathered that, but what's the story, man? She's not going to pay more for some crappy place. He brings a hand to his heart. I would never ask her to do that, never. Do I look like a slimy salesman? Of course not. But when you tell her you have something on the third floor and she gives you a deposit, and then you tell her it's the second floor, you have to know that sounds exactly like you're trying to pull the wool over her eyes. No, I would never do that. I want her to be happy. You have to let me explain what happened and show you the other one I have in mind for her. Stefan gestures to the marble floor as Joy's eyes drift down and widen. I think she might be falling in love with the floor, too. She mouths, so adorable. All the more reason to stay strong for her. Stefan stops at the winding staircase, then drops his voice to a whisper, his nose crinkling in disgust.
Cigarettes.
Joy's eyes widen and she recoils. She understood that word for sure.
The previous occupant smoked?
Stefan nods, switching to English as he speaks to her.
Yes, it will take at least 1 week to clean it.
Joy cringes.
I can't wait a week.
He holds up a finger in excitement.
Okay, that's why I have another one for you.
Why didn't you just tell her that? I ask in French.
Because my English isn't perfect and I have a beautiful place for her that I want her to see. I hate smoking, Joy says in French.
And I smile at her, even though that's a relatively easy phrase to translate. Still, it's good she knows a little bit. She returns to English.
I won't go anywhere near a place that smells like cigarettes.
The man laughs and smacks my shoulder. See?
Your lady cannot stand cigarettes. You know that about her, right? Of course, I say quickly before it occurs to me what he truly means by your lady. We only found out yesterday when the previous occupant moved out. It's against our rules, but what can you do? Now we have to clean it out and it's awful. She won't like it. She sent me a long list of likes and dislikes. I'm sure you know them all. Yes, of course, I say quickly, even though I pretty much only know that chocolate croissant, coffee, and adorable entryways are on the top of her list of pros. But the studio we have is quite large, and we will give her a discount. I wanted to explain this to her, but I thought it best to do it in person. He turns to Joy. I'm so sorry for the trouble. It's okay, she says, beaming. And I will show you the studio now. I think you will like it, he says with a smile, gesturing to the stairs. Be very careful. This is an old building and it has a narrow wooden staircase. Joy's eyes twinkle as she takes the first step. She makes a sound like a squeak. Oh my God, I love it. It's uneven. I roll my eyes as I laugh. First the door, now the uneven steps. Remember, you do have to walk up these every day. She marches up, head held high. I don't care. They are the complete opposite of my big fat driveway back home. Therefore, I love these uneven steps. When we reach the second floor, Stefan heads to a door at the end of a narrow hallway and unlocks it, opening into a relatively well-lit and admittedly spacious studio. Joy wanders in, running her hand over the slim kitchen counter, along the back of a black leather couch, and then over the frame of a window that lets in a decent amount of light considering it's on the second floor. She turns around. It's not bad. I had just hoped for more light. She looks at me. Know what I mean? I nod. Yeah, you do love your light, I say, since I'm quickly learning Joy doesn't just like things, she falls hard for them. She's a woman who goes all in. And, like that, my dirty mind slips to thoughts of things I'd like to put all in her. Crap. Must clean filth from brain now. I glance at Stefan. That does the trick. He taps his finger against his lip. You have a way for her to have more light? I ask. He takes a deep breath, claps his hands together, speaking to us both. Okay, I like you too. I want you to have a good deal. You are young lovers and have so much energy. I have an idea. My instinct to correct mistakes kicks in. We're not. Joy steps on my toe. Hard. If there's one language I understand thoroughly, it's shut the fuck up when I smack you. I zip my lips. This might not be to your taste, Stefan says to me, switching to rapid-fire French again. The flat I have in mind is one we don't rent often. It's usually just on Airbnb for those who want a true Parisian experience and can brave the stairs. He tips his forehead to Joy. I have a feeling she might like it. She has a certain exuberance about her, he says with a wink, and I nod in acknowledgement, then turn to Joy. He says you're exuberant, and he has something else that you might like. She wiggles her eyebrows. Exuberant is my middle name. Stefan smiles. But it's on the sixth floor. You need to climb up the uneven 84 steps every time to reach this place. We don't have a lift. I nod and give Joy the overview. To my complete non-surprise, she says, I want to see it. We climb. Up and around. The steps groan and shriek their displeasure with every footfall. This is precisely the type of climb no one wants. When we reach the top floor, Stefan unlocks a door and tugs it open. Once inside, Joy gasps. She blinks, taking in the sun-drenched flat. The living room is dripping with natural light. It's bathed in it. And Joy marches to the windows, places her hands on the edge of the floor-to-ceiling shutters that open onto a tiny terrace and gazes outside. Honestly, she's in a perfect position for all the things we can't do anymore.
I do my best to imagine she's thinking deep thoughts about turtles or hamburgers, and that helps me navigate my way out of the dirty zone. She spins around. And it has parquet floors too. Gah! I laugh. Maybe wait till he gives you more details and a price? But she can't even wait, because she pushes open the door to the bedroom. More windows! She calls out. And when she strides out of it, she points to an open set of stairs at the end of the living room. Where do those go? Ah, yes, Stefan says with a quirk in his lips. We have a rooftop terrace here, like a garden. Her eyes widen. She heads up the stairs and momentarily out of sight. I follow, quickly joining her on the roof. Potted plants and flowers line the edges, and an iron railing rises 4 feet high. She wraps her hands around it and stares at the endless view of Paris. Everything, she whispers, wonder in her tone. I can see everything. Stefan cuts in. This one is a little bit more because of the terrace. She turns around. I'll take it. Stefan smiles and shrugs. It's perfect for lovers, no? Joy wraps a hand around my arm, squeezing my bicep. For a moment, I'm speechless, all from her hand on my arm. It makes no sense why it should feel so damn good, but it does, and her touch sends a wave of heat through me. Now I'm thinking how very perfect this flat is for lovers, and cursing that we can't test out the window, the garden, the terrace, not to mention the bed. Then I remember Stefan's question and Joy's foot digging into my toe, and perhaps she needs me to play along. It is perfect for lovers. I drape an arm over her shoulder and she lifts her face to mine. In the span of a second, it's as if Stefan is gone and there is just this woman and me. And all I can think is how much I'd like to press a kiss of those perfect red lips. Perhaps she can read my mind, because she dusts her lips against my jaw, and that barest touch triggers a rush of heat in my body. I'm not even sure why we're playing this game, but I also don't really care. When she lets go of me, she says, I can move in today, is that okay? Stefan nods. Excellent. I will switch the paperwork. Let me go call the office to get that started. He heads down the stairs, leaving us on the rooftop garden. I scrub my hand over my jaw. Why did you want to go along with the whole young lovers thing? Because that man is a romantic. I could see it in him, in the way he looked at us and seemed to catalogue how we interacted. Some part of him liked the idea that we were a thing. Doesn't hurt anything for him to think that, she nudges me. Besides, we almost were, right? We almost were. It didn't bother you to play along, did it? Not in the least. I suppose we can go back to being translator and translatee, Blaze? She winks and heads down the stairs.